Welcome to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Art is Jane Curley's passion. It's also her profession. She has a PhD in art history from Yale and works as an independent curator specializing in the art of illustration. She's been a member of the board of the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art in Amherst, Massachusetts, and a guest curator there since its founding in 2002. Eric Carle is the renowned author-illustrator of more than 70 books, including the 1969 classic The Hungry Caterpillar. The museum's mission is to inspire a love of art and reading in this country. It collects, preserves, presents, and celebrates picture books and picture book illustrators from around the world. Jane has organized group shows at the Carle, as well as retrospectives on the work of William Steig, Chris Van Allsburg, and Antonio Fresconi. Most recently, Jane has taken her talents to the New York Historical Society, where she is the guest curator for a special exhibit marking the 75th anniversary of the classic children's book, Madeline, brought to life by author-illustrator Ludwig Bemelmans. In addition to drawings from all six Madeline books, the retrospective features more than 90 original works, paintings, drawings of the old Ritz Hotel in New York, panels from the Onassis yacht, archival photographs and memorabilia, including a fan letter from First Lady Jackie Kennedy. Alexandra Kennedy, executive director of the Eric Carle Museum, which organized Madeline in New York, the art of Ludwig Bemelmans, wrote in the catalog's foreword, "This fascinating exhibition was a labor of love for the skillful and determined Jane Curley, who brought her passion for children's book illustration, for Paris and New York, and for a good treasure hunt all into sharp relief. We can't thank her enough." Well, I want to welcome and thank you, Jane, for being my guest today.
Thank you, Sandy.
What fostered your passion for children's illustration?
I never got over that moment when I opened my first Nancy Drew and realized there were no color pictures in it.
That it was just words.
It was just words with a few black and white illustrations. I thought, oh, how am I ever going to grow up and learn to read books without illustrations? I've always loved that combination of word and image because it makes things go from two-dimension to three-dimension in the most magical way.
What picture book had such a strong influence on you when you were growing up?
Well, Madeline was certainly one.
Hello.
I loved all of Bemelman's books, and he did a number more than the Madeline books. He did one called Parsley that I loved, which was a hymn to the natural world and to animal rights.
So you get older, now you can read, and you say, this is crazy that I don't know what Nancy Drew looks like, or I need to see her solving a mystery. And that continues till you get to college?
I did get over the fact that I wasn't going to get pictures in every book. And I became an omnivore of books. Mm-hmm. I'm still an addicted reader. Mm-hmm. But when I had my own children, then I had this opportunity to dive back into the world of picture books. And I went headfirst and laughing and loving it. And I never looked back. I've organized a couple of children's libraries, one at my children's nursery school, one upstate in a little community that didn't have a children's library. And when the Carle Museum was founded, I knew the founding director, and he called me and said, quick, I need a stunt double for an exhibition. The curator had needed back surgery. And can you do it? And I said, yes, please. And I haven't looked back.
Now, was that the first time you curated a show?
No, I have curated in the past, but never picture books. That was my first picture book show.
Uh-huh.
And it was on an artist named Nancy Burkert, who is one of the most exquisite artists you will ever see. She did a Snow White in 1970. That's my vote for the most beautiful picture book of the 20th century.
What was the first show you ever curated, and what was that experience like?
Okay, so it was probably in grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was Yale?
It was Yale, and it was on mezzotints, I think. And then I did my dissertation across the street at the British Art Center, which was on exhibition watercolors. I also did a show of photography, a 19th century woman named Rosalie Thorne. We had a lot of great experience at Yale. They were wonderful. There were two museums there. So the curatorial experience was immediate, hands-on, and exactly what I wanted. I did not want to be a teacher. I didn't want to be in a slide library. I wanted to be able to work with objects.
Bring them all together so that people from the outside would come in and feel the same passion that you feel?
You just summed up what I love about being a curator. You get to go out and do your research. amass a collection of works, and then write the story, tell the story so that other people get excited about what you found.
I've been to so many exhibitions, and there's so little I know about what goes into them. When you curate a show, however big or small, do you basically do that alone?
Yes.
It's like
being an artist in a way. You sit alone in front of your computer or in the library in the past, working away, finding things, and then 3 years later, you're an overnight hit because you've put all this stuff on the wall. But it's the life of a scholar and a researcher is very singular. You're by yourself. And it's a lot of fun. You do meet wonderful people. The Bemelman show, the Madeleine show, took me from a little house in outside of Paris to the prairies of Emporia, Kansas. I visited a pig farm in Long Island, a miniature horse farm in New Jersey. I went to Yale to look at the library, to Stanford. I went all over looking for things. And it is like a treasure hunt.
This is embarrassing, this question, because it's almost so pedestrian. How did you know what you were doing? How did you know what to amass, what to get rid of?
Well, you do have feedback. I do have people at the Carl Museum that I talk to on a regular basis.
Do you also have carte blanche?
No, they set limits, which is a good thing because had I been left to myself, the show would have had 1,000 objects in it. I have trouble limiting myself. I find things and I get excited, whether it's a matchbook from Luchow's or whether it's the murals from an old hotel that he painted. To me, they're all exciting discoveries. And that's the art, I suppose, of being a good curator is telling the story in a compelling way, having the little touch, but having the big, broad picture as well.
Does it make a difference if you're curating a show about a particular artist who has never been the subject of an exhibition before?
Well, it's exciting to be able to introduce somebody and say, this is somebody you've never heard of, and he's fantastic, or she is. Bemelman certainly is well known, but people think of him as the author of Madeleine.
And that's it.
Don't understand that he wrote and drew and painted for adults, that he lived this marvelous life. He was born and bred in hotels. It was his first career. He knew everything there was to know about food and wine and fancy living. But deep inside, he had to be an artist. And the struggle of his life was trying to juxtapose or merge those two passions, art and
hotels. And what's the quote from him, that what drives you? And he said a low bank balance?
Yes. Somebody asked him what made him be so creative, and he said a low bank balance.
What do you get from this? Is it the joy of sharing, or is it just something more personal to you, that you have this journey? I'm saying this not in a pejorative way. It's kind of a selfish job because it gives you so much joy, while at the same time bringing joy into other people. You know, not very many people can say that.
I am the luckiest woman on the planet, Sandy, because I do something that I absolutely love doing, and I get to share it with other people.
And you're good at it, because if you weren't good at it, nobody would want to hire you.
Nobody would hire me. That's right.
And what does it mean to be an independent guest curator as opposed to curating at the Whitney or the Modern? Explain the difference.
As an independent curator, I am paid by the show that I do. And I have to scramble to find my shows. I'm not part of an institution, so I don't get the benefits. But I also don't have the day-to-day distractions that a curator, say, at the Historical Society might have. They have to do housekeeping, and they have to work on a variety of shows. Lucky me, I get to focus on one show at a time and give it my all and do a bang-up job.
Do you come up with the idea?
No, I do not. I am asked.
So the Carl Museum, which you've had this long-term relationship with, said we'd like to do this retrospective of Ludwig Bemelmans.
I'm on the board, and the board, we sit around and we kick ideas around and say, who can we do an exhibition of who will be not only somebody we want to honor, but someone who will catch the public's imagination? And Bemelmans fit the bill on both counts because it's the 75th anniversary of the publication of Madeleine this year. But also, he's one of those magic artists who appeals to children and adults. And there hadn't been a show in about 50 years. So it was high time, and we jumped on it.
Now, did you die and go to heaven when the Eric Carle Museum was founded?
Totally.
Because of children's picture books.
Excited. So behind the idea. illustration art has always been the redheaded stepchild of the art world. And it's time for people to reconsider that. It's the first art you know. This is what you see when you're a child. You're sitting in your mother or your father's lap. You are heart to heart with a parent, and you're looking at art. And that is a profound and life-changing experience.
And so why do you think it's been cast aside or had been cast aside for so long? It's just, oh, anybody can draw lines?
People always come up to me and say, oh, I've got an idea for a children's book. And I smile and I say, well, good for you. That and a token will get you a ride on the subway. It's incredibly difficult to do. In fact, I think it's harder than an adult book because you have to capture the world in 32 pages. That's tough. Every word has to count. Every stroke of your pen, every choice you make has tremendous impact.
You know, one of our guests has been Diane Muldrow, who is the editor of the Golden Books. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful experience. I mean, most of us have grown up on Golden Books. Whether you care for the illustrations or you don't, it's just that was a seminal series in so many
Golden
of our
Books,
lives.
Golden Books.
And I think they sold 55 quadrillion copies.
If not a Brazilian. They were one of the great things in picture books during the 20th century. They were a wonderful institution. They used terrific artists. You seem to think the art wasn't very good. There were some marvelous. The Provensons, Tibor Gurgly, all kinds of people.
I didn't mean that. I think that people were very dismissive.
Oh, because it was cheap. The
production values were low. Yes.
True, they were. But that made it affordable and available to children who otherwise might not have seen a book.
Absolutely. Also, several years back, I saw the wonderful exhibit at the Jewish Museum of Curious George.
Yes.
And the appreciation, aside from what the husband and wife team had to do to escape the Nazis and get the hell out of, you know, Europe, but just, you know, the history of that. And it really does give you pause. It does give you an appreciation where we might have been so dismissive in the past, even though the illustration spoke to us. And then we get older and we just kind of leave them in the dust. And you're making sure that doesn't happen anymore.
I never could give up my love of picture books. I just couldn't do it. And why should we? Most of the information we receive today is visual. You're constantly having to edit the stream of visuals that go by. And if you know about picture books and if you've really looked at them, you're going to be a very good editor of all that information that's streaming by you.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Jane Curley, guest curator. Her most recent exhibition is at the New York Historical Society, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the classic children's book, Madeline. So how long did that take you to put together? What did you do to bring Ludwig Bemelmans to life?
Okay, soup to nuts.
Yes.
It was a 3-year process.
Is that a long time?
It's about average, I'd say. Okay. Maybe a little longer than usual. Sometimes you get an assignment and you have to jump to it.
The assignment came from the Eric Carle Museum at first.
It did. We had a wonderful board member, Kate Clark, who suggested the show. And everybody said, yes, this is a green light. They asked me to do it. And I was thrilled. I was so excited. And Kate put me in touch with the Bemelmans family and with his grandson, John, who carries on the Madeline stories today. Mm-hmm. And they were welcoming and kind. And I went down to visit them, to visit Barbara, who lives on a horse farm in New Jersey. And she has the most exquisite old general store across the street where she has all the Bemelmans material. It's a wonderful archive. And I got to
rifle through it all,
spend days and days down there. And I was in heaven. It was wonderful. That was the beginning. Then, once you get the sort of structure of where you're going, okay, it's a Madeline show, but I wanted it to be about Bemelman's other work and his life as well, then you have to start filling in the dots. Mm-hmm. And that's where it got really fun and interesting, and where I would find a reference to a work that he'd done in Paris in 1953. And I'd track that down and I'd find that there's an entire bar over there in Paris that nobody knows about. It's for sale. And I had to go see it. And I had to bring one of my collectors. And he bought the bar and brought it back. three of the panels are in the exhibit, and the rest are in his wonderful hotel, the Ocean House, up
in Rhode Island.
In Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. That was an adventure, too. You get to know collectors, and they're wonderful people. They're passionate about the people that they collect.
Is it difficult to ask a collector to borrow their works for an exhibit?
Yes, and I think it's very flattering to them to think that they have something that's museum-worthy. And Chuck was one of the first people I asked. I told him about the show, and his face lit up, and he said, oh, I have a whole suite of Bemelman's drawings. I bought them from the windows of Bergdorf Goodman's. And I went, what? And he said, yeah, they were hanging in the window. And I walked in, and I said, are those for sale? They said, yes. And he bought them. And that was the beginning of his world-class collection of Bemelman's
So art. In addition to the family, he may be the next...
I'd say he probably has the
best
collection.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. What happens with collectors? They just donate their works for a period of time. There's no money going back
There's
and forth.
There's no money going back and forth. He generously offered this suite of drawings. It was a article that Bemelman's had done in 1950 for Town and Country called Adieu to the Ritz. And then when I found that bar, I called him up and I said, Chuck, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And he said, great, let's get on a plane and go see them. And so off we went to Paris. It was amazing. It was a thrill. And this is not day-to-day curatorial stuff that you get to jump on a plane and go to Paris and buy a work of art. This show was extraordinary that way. It just had moments of wow, of I can't believe this is happening.
You know, we should be curating your curating. It's a story in and of itself because this had such an impact on you. And it's and like you say, it is a treasure hunt.
And it's not over yet. Yesterday, Sandy, I got on a train, Amtrak. Let's not go there. Sat for 3 hours in a hot car, but finally I got to where I was going because I'd found yet another Bemelman's bar, another Bemelman's restaurant. The first one he ever did, Habsburg House. A woman came in, saw the show, and called me up. She called the museum, the Historical Society, and said, could I speak to the curator? They gave her my number. Mm-hmm. She called me. Her father and uncle bought the restaurant from Bemelman's partners and ran it for 20 years. And she said, and I have some of the wall paintings and a bunch of photographs. Would you like to see them? And I said, it's an emergency. I'll be there tomorrow. So I went there yesterday. They were charming, marvelous. She was so much fun to talk to because she'd worked in the restaurant as a young girl. She'd prepped in the kitchen and she knew it intimately. It's since been knocked down. But her father saved these three pieces of wall and some of the photographs of the
You know, this sounds like a documentary
hotel.
To me. I'd watch it. Mm-hmm. I just was transported to my childhood. I was sort of like the village idiot going through this exhibit because I just couldn't stop smiling. And I was so happy.
Oh, Sandy, you make me... That's my job is done. When somebody walks into a show and you see them smiling or laughing, my job is done.
You know, I also have to tell you what was emotional for me. Ludwig Bemelmans was born in 1898. He died in 1962. And I thought, wow, he was young when he died. But be that as it may, and I'm going through the memorabilia and I read this note from Jackie Kennedy. Caroline's going crazy for the books and then extending this invitation to him in the spring of 1962 to come to the White House. They were going to collaborate on a book. Did he make that or did he die before he got to the White
House? No, alas. He wanted... They had an interesting back-and-forth correspondence, and he did visit her a couple of times at the White House. He wanted her to write the book, and she was sort of pussyfooting around. You know, she was an editor later in life.
Right.
And he wanted her to do the work because he was madly working on three other books, lots of other projects, and he knew he was sick. He'd been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, so the last thing he needed was yet another project. The book never happened while he was alive. However, his grandson, John Marciano, picked up the idea and 50 years later published Madeline at the White House.
I don't know. That letter just touched me in a way that I can't explain. Not that he needed validation from Jackie Kennedy. It was just the humanity of it all, you know?
Oh, it's a charming letter. She must have been the most charming, witty woman because she talks about how Caroline was so inspired by the book that she wanted to jump off the Key Bridge in Washington because she thought that would be the fastest route to get a dog and 12 puppies.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Jane Curley, guest curator. Her most recent exhibition is at the New York Historical Society, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the classic children's book, Madeline. I have to ask you this, that has bothered me my entire life, if you know the answer to this. Why was Miss Clavel called Miss Clavel? when clearly she should have been Sister Clavel?
Very, very acute observation.
It has driven me crazy, Jane.
And people make this mistake all the time. They think Madeline is French. She's not. She's a New Yorker. She was born and bred in Pete's Tavern on Irving Place, where Bemelmans would come around the corner because he lived in Gramercy Park and hang out, and he'd write on the back of an envelope or a menu. And he wrote the first lines of the book there. Miss Clavel, everybody thinks she's a nun. She's not. She is a beloved guardian teacher. And I trace her back to Bemelman's early days before he was 6 years old when he was living in a hotel on Lake Gemunden in Austria. And he had a French mamselle who he called Gazelle because he couldn't pronounce mamselle. Mm-hmm. And there's a drawing that he did in one of his adult books that shows the two of them sitting in a grape arbor, and mamselle is a dead ringer for Miss Clavel. She's wearing that funny nun's outfit. But Miss Clavel, which rhymes with gazelle, mm-hmm. is not a nun. And you'll know that if you look at the picture of her in the middle of the night. Miss Clavel turned on the light and said something's not right.
When Madeline had an appendectomy.
Yes.
Right.
In the first book.
Yes, I noticed that. What, you're wearing regular pajamas.
She's wearing a fabulous peignoir, and she has a puffy satin headboard.
And she sleeps alone, though.
And this is not a nun's bedroom.
But it was just kind of de rigueur from back then.
Here's the thing. His mother went to a convent that was run by sisters in Altötting, Bavaria. And that's where the nun part comes from. So like all of Bemelmans' characters, Miss Clavel is an amalgamation of many people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's of the mother's nuns. It's of his mamselle. And, you know, he was redoing his childhood. He had a desperately bad childhood.
Did his father desert the family?
His father ran off when he was 6 years old with another woman. And it was a devastation. He was dragged off to his mother's family in Germany, and they tried to erase all the Gallic out mm-hmm. of his being. He mm-hmm. only spoke French at that point. They threw him into a German-speaking school. They gave him a buzz cut. And of course he revolted and dug his heels in. And he was a desperately bad student. They took him out of school at age 12 because he was, to them, ineducable. And they apprenticed him to his uncle Hans, who ran the family hotel business. And he was pretty bad at that, too. And in fact, when he was 16, he shot a waiter. And he was offered the choice: go to reform school in Germany or go in exile, go to America. So, of course, he chose to come to America. Mm-hmm.
What struck you about this experience for you that might be different from some of the other shows you've curated?
It certainly is one of the highlights of my career, if not the highlight. I just fell for this guy, hook, line, and sinker. You always fall in love with the subject that you're working on when you're
a
researcher.
You'd like to hope that happens. Or does that color you?
Even if you loathe and despise them, you're mm-hmm. you're fascinated by them. But Bemelmans is so beguiling. He's so charming. He's so rueful when he makes mistakes. He makes you feel good about the fact that we all do make mistakes. We all run into trouble. And yet, isn't it wonderful, as he said, when it all ends well without the aid of either religion or the police?
That's a good point. What have been some of the highlights of your career? And I just want to go back to, before you answer that, to say that this is one of them, and you've been in this business a long time. Does that not speak volumes to you?
It's true. The more you do something, the more practiced you become, the better you get, and you bring a wealth of experience to an exhibit that you didn't have before. You see angles and areas that you would have missed before. Mm-hmm. Your writing is more polished. Your abilities with lenders, with other institutions. This is a whole career's worth of experience coming to bear on this show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm really proud of this one. This one is the best one I've ever done.
Also, the appreciation one has to have for you. I mean, it's not only amassing the works of art. You're writing the catalog. I mean, you wrote a book.
And that was fun. That was
a lot of
fun.
But that's also a lot of work.
Yeah. And to have Bemelmans, who was such a wonderful writer, how is this man who failed three times? He repeated one grade three times. He never passed an exam. How could he have turned out to be such a good writer? He spoke four languages, all of them with an accent. How could he write as well as he did in English? He was brilliant, funny, His books are like P.G. Woodhouse's books. You read one and you go, oh, I have to read another. That was so good.
There's an addiction.
There is. There is. You just go on and on and on. The first 6 months I spent reading, and smiling and laughing and loving it.
How often did you have to check back with the powers that be as you're working? They gave you 3 years to put this together?
No, there was no hard and fast deadline. Well, I suppose there was. 2 years, 2.5 years. They knew it was going to be 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I started in late 2011, I guess. I'm bad on dates. And the good thing is, the lucky thing for me is I happen to adore everybody who works at the Carl. It's an amazing outfit, great institution. They're a lot of fun. They're my friends as well as my professional colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk to them all the time.
Do you commute back and forth between New York City and Amherst?
No. I'm up there maybe 3 or 4 times a year, tops. But we talk on the phone, we email all the time, and they come down to New York a lot, too.
So when an idea for a show comes up, is it come from you? Or
it can. I can suggest ideas, and sometimes they'll say yes, and sometimes they'll say, no, we have 14 other wonderful picture book artists that we have to honor first with a show, but we'll put it in the hopper and
But can you take your idea to another institution? Because you're independent, can you go to the Jones Museum?
I could, but I have such a great working relationship with the Carl that I've always taken my ideas to them. And this is our first collaboration with the New York Historical Society. It's worked like a charm. We get on like a house of fire. It's been great fun. And I do hope that we will continue to have a relationship with them and that we'll do more shows there.
But when you're working on the Bemelman show, which was a huge undertaking, are you doing anything else?
No.
That's the
difference between being an independent curator and working for a museum.
What is it like to work for a museum?
It's a different experience, and it's one that I don't have a lot of experience doing. But you're a generalist when you're working in a museum, and you're working on any number of different projects. When you're an independent curator, you pick one subject and you drill down.
And you're happy doing what you do and in the way that you do it.
I adore what I do. I love it. It's like, as the chief curator at the Carl always says, it's like being paid to go to recess to do this.
So what's next for you?
I'm going to be doing a Myra Kelman show. Myra is a wonderful author, illustrator, and a friend. And when I talked to her about the Bemelman show, her face lit up and she said, oh, I love Bemelman's. I based my career on him. I wanted to write. I wanted to paint. I wanted to have an entourage of friends. I wanted to travel. I wanted to stay in fabulous hotels. I wanted to eat at all the best restaurants. He was my model and inspiration. So I said, great, you can write a letter to him as a foreword to the catalog. And she did. And you probably saw it at the very end of the show, a 4-page letter, Dear Ludwig. And it's a marvelous summation of why she thinks he's a terrific artist and how he inspired her. So she's my next show. Very excited.
And now this will be about a 2 to 3 year project?
It's 2017.
And at the Eric Carle.
At the Eric Carle. And who knows, maybe somewhere else. We'll take it on the road, I hope.
Jane, I've had the best time getting to know you. And
ditto, Sandy.
And talking about an area that I have great appreciation for, but I didn't know very much about. And it's people like you we need in our lives so that people like me can go to these exhibits and feel wonderful about being alive. I just flipped out for it. It's a wonderful, wonderful exhibit. And I'm going to get myself to the Eric Carle Museum in Amherst sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you so much. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.